Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
You're listening to Golden State of Mindcast. Ivan, Bram, Nate, all here. Coming off the heels of a big, big win on Wednesday. A huge turn of events compared to Monday, obviously, with the blowout in game two. It was really fun, guys. Do you have a like what was the biggest takeaway that you saw from game two? Bram, go first.
I personally, or like from a team perspective?
Well, like what did they do differently that like, or did they do anything differently?
I mean, they played
the game one.
They played well. The team played good basketball.
Played hard.
Yeah, I mean, both teams played hard, and the Warriors played harder. I thought that the Thunder really came out and punched the Warriors in the mouth in game one. And if could have scripted a sort of bounce back game, that was obviously it in game two. I still think this series is going seven. It's by no means over, and I think it's just gonna, from here on out, it's gonna be a battle of not of coaching, but definitely of just sort of how they respond to the runs more than anything. Because I think that, you know, you saw at the end of the second quarter, you saw the Warriors make this 8-0 run, 11-2 run, whatever it was in the last couple minutes, and then the Thunder didn't properly address that, and then the Warriors came back out and just put their collective feet on the throat of the Thunder boom, and then that was the end of the game. But I think that's not necessarily that's not a given. That's not just what's going to happen for the rest of the series. I think that the Warriors are going to go on runs, and the Thunder are going to find something to counteract that, and the Thunder are going to go on runs, and it's up to the Warriors to try to find a way to, you know, to counteracted as well. So I still believe that it's going to be a long series, but overall I had a blast watching that game. You know, it's always fun to see from a purely like masochistic, or not masochistic, but just from a Warriors standpoint, like I love seeing a blowout, especially after what happened in game one. So
yeah, totally. I mean, so it didn't, to my mind, and hearing a lot of much smarter people talk on podcasts and reading today, in kind of the epilogue of the game, you know, they didn't act, it doesn't seem like they did that much differently, but like you say, they just played better, just played more consistently, maybe. But that, like, is that all there is to it? Like, if the Warriors play kind of up to their potential and up to what we know of as their abilities, like, is that all it comes down to? Even though, you know, there is going to be runs, both teams are going to go on runs, but like, is there anything you saw that they did that was you know, just more effective for any specific reasons than Credit Monday?
Yeah, there was greater attention to rebounding, certainly. I think that was obviously my big concern coming into this series. Rebounding is one of those things where a lot of it is effort in a lot of ways, and it's kind of a, it sounds like, you know, in this world of analytics, and I'm not anti-analytics by any means, but in this world, like, we focus so much on numbers. I mean, this one really does come down to effort and attention, and actually the basic fundamentals of getting in front of your guy and just, like, battling. There was, like, a rebound that Klay Thompson had, like, a defensive rebound that Klay Thompson had, like, in the third quarter that was just, like, 5-6 guys bounce, you know, batting the ball around. Klay Thompson comes down with it. And I think those are the kind of ball that the Warriors have been losing against the Thunder, and you can tell this was that game to me. They really put some effort into that. So that was good. You know, Steph was ridiculous for a good portion of the game. But I think, you know, I think what Bram originally said, you know, look at the last series, the Thunder and Spurs. I mean, the Spurs came out and trounced them in the first game. The Thunder win the second game close, and then they ended up winning the series. I don't think we can really take very much from yesterday's game. I think in the end, this game two is not a representation at all of what these two teams are, and I think the Thunder are going to bounce back, and we probably haven't seen a good example of what both of these teams are at their best. I think the Warriors collapsed in game one in the second half, and Westbrook was off in the third quarter of game one, and I would kind of throw out game two as an example of anything. So Yeah, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. I think, like Bram said, I don't think it'll go seven games. I picked six. And the nice thing about the Warriors losing game one at home was that six becomes more likely. But, you know, I...
for your own prediction.
Yeah, for my own prediction. I mean,
I mean, let us not...
I win this prediction game.
Yeah, let's not lose sight of what's important here.
Predictions,
yeah.
I wish we had done that on this podcast before the series started. We should have had those predictions. I was thinking five, and like I kind of still want to say five, even okay. with that game one loss. And like I guess I kind of disagree. I think that what we saw last night is more closer to reality than we saw in game one. Like I think that. They didn't really do anything different. Like Steph was ridiculous, but that's what he is. He's ridiculous. Right. Like, he's on these yeah. runs. There was in the very sparse amount of preparation I did for this. I was reading an article.
Give away our trade secrets, Ivan.
NewsOK.com by Barry Trammell, and he was noting how Steph played 30 minutes, right? And mm-hmm. for 27 of the minutes, he scored 4 points. For the other yeah. 3 minutes, he scored, what was it, like, you know, 22 or something like that? it was just these flurries. It was these yeah. moments where the Thunder kind of forgot. Like, they rested just a little bit on defense, right? Just took their foot off the pedal just a tiny bit, and then that's all the Warriors need. Almost always, that's what we've seen this season, at least, is just like if you make some mistakes, Warriors burn you, and they've been very, very consistent in that. And I don't think that the Thunder are capable of you know, playing flawless defensive basketball for 48 minutes. It just isn't going to happen. So from that perspective, like what they did in game one, that feels more like the outlier than game two to me.
Interesting. So when I was saying that, I was thinking that, you know, they're not 27 points better than the Thunder, or, you know, they were up more than 30 when they had the start, when they had their main rotation players. And I mean, I'm just saying, like, I don't see the Warriors being that much better than the Thunder. Like, I would imagine, like, the reality of both of them playing at full strength would be, you know, 8 to 10 points better. If that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to agree with you. I just think that, as we've seen between game one and two, the swings are going to be harsh and often in yeah. this series, and that neither team can seem... I think that the series is going to come down to which team is going to put together the more consistent approach. And, right. like, which is kind of hilarious, considering that they have three... maybe four if you put Clay in there as well, you know, he of the 37 point quarters. They have potentially the four most offensively sophisticated and capable players in the league, or offensively, like, bombastic players, I guess, like people who are the four of them with Clay and Steph and Durant and Westbrook, obviously, are capable of just totally going off and taking over a game. And it's going to come down to which team can really, like I said, put together the more consistent approach.
Yeah.
Which, given the fact that it's like two superstars versus two or three superstars, depending on how you want to cut it, like it's funny that it's going to come down to that. But again, like, it's the Western Conference Finals and there's no place for hero ball. And I think that what we saw in game two was... the Warriors, the ball movement was so spectacular, the most part, that then it allowed Steph to loosen up and go off in that third quarter. Mm. But it was a product of their defense and it was a product of their ball movement. It wasn't like he came out of the gate and he said, okay, I'm going to win this game. It was in the flow of the game, but then it was just, that's the part of this flow, is that he's dropping the hot rim. And it's just, the stuff is just off the chain. But it wasn't like, okay, Steph, go out there and score 15 points in 2 minutes or whatever right. it was. I mean, like, right. you know, I think his hottest moments and his most ambitious moments are all a part of their game plan and their game flow as a team. Mm-hmm. And I think that if they can keep that up, then it probably will be shorter than seven. But if the Thunder can, I mean, what the Thunder want to do is relegate them to playing ISO ball, and they want Steph to try to be there, I think, you know, and they don't want that ball mm-hmm. movement, because obviously their pick and roll defense is not where it should be. If they have Cantor on the floor or Waiters at the same time, they're going to get sliced and diced by the Warriors' movement. But if they, but both of those guys can sort of play one-on-one defense. So like, right. if they can force that action, and if they can force hero ball, then it plays to their favor, as we saw in game one. But the ironic thing is that if the Warriors then get their game flow in motion, then hero ball happens automatically, or not automatically, but just as a happenstance outcome of that motion. And that's when you see Steph going off for 15 points in 2 minutes.
You mentioned hero ball. And, I think that actually one thing we're really seeing more of in this series, I think, compared to some of the other series, just because of the nature of how the two teams match up, is I think the Warriors are picking on one-on-one matchups a lot more. Like, they abused Enes Kanter for, like, it was really actually sad to watch. Like, kind of painful. I was just like, man, they got to stop just doing this to boy like this. But, you know, I think the downside to that, I do think they got to a point where they were falling into the trap of going one-on-one. And I think once they do that, they did it like in a series of possessions. And like right in the beginning of the third quarter, there were two really bad possessions. I remember, I think it was the beginning of the third, where like Steph came up and just launched a bad shot, or Draymond launched a bad shot, and then Steph came up and did another play or somebody like that. I do think that because they're an emotional team, they can get caught up in those emotions, and sometimes that tendency to fall into one-on-one play does sort of, it sort of worries me.
Yeah.
Because I think they get carried away with it. But then, like, also, like you said, also they can also come back, and, you know, if Steph is going to go off and get super hot, yeah, you want him shooting every shot. Or if Clay is going for 37, yeah, you want him shooting every shot. But finding the balance of, well, maybe we shouldn't start ISOing Barnes. You know, like
right.
trying to find that balance of taking advantage of the other team's weaknesses, but not overdoing it.
And I think as Apricot or Apricot, tomato, tomato, however you want, has shown that a lot of Steph's shots, when he gets really hot, it's not like he just is bringing, I mean, sometimes he does, obviously, but it's not like every time he's just bringing the ball up the court, juking some dude and shooting from 35 feet.
Right.
I mean, it's a product of ball movement and of team play. And it's just that they know that the ball is eventually going to get to him once they pass it around the horn, or once they run through a series of back screens or whatever, you know? And so, the fact that he's getting those shots, I mean, that's why he's so wide open. And that's why he's able to go on those 15, 20 point runs. But it's not just, you know, you can't just say, oh, well, Steph scored all these points. It's the fact that the team is like, man, Steph is in that zone. And then they run a bunch of plays that are designed to get him open, you know, where he's acting off ball, or he's doing whatever he's doing, you know?
Right, right, right. Yeah. I mean, well, Steph is fine. I think it's when the whole team starts getting into it. And they're definitely in game one that happened. In game one, they fell into that trap of one-on-one ball.
Yeah.
Conley. And it was like the entire second half was like, Draymond was like bringing the ball down court and shooting in traffic, and Clay would shoot some crazy off balance shots that he really cannot make with regularity. Steph even took, I mean, crazy as it is to say, Steph took some bad shots in game one. Like, there's some shots that were like, even for Steph,
right,
were bad shots. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because these were like possessions where there were like no passes.
Right.
I mean, it was like guys coming up for like in a succession of possessions in the second half. I think that's where we have seen them just in this one series, we've seen them get carried away with it. And we've also seen, as you're saying, like Steph, when Steph gets hot, yeah, they're moving the ball. I think they just need to keep that up. I mean, and try not to fall into, well, let's try to ISO Barnes now.
Yeah.
When they get to that point, it's like, come on, guys, let's slow down.
I mean, when they start ISOing Barnes, I just like in my head, I just see Ivan's eyeballs start to bleed, Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever that movie is with the Nazis.
Yeah.
It's just bad. Like, everything is just bad. Yeah. He turns into wax. The blood is flowing. I feel the same way, honestly. But you know, I think, again, like, also, did you see that quote from Durant? I think today or maybe last night, that was, he was just like, yeah, well, Steph just hits bad shots.
Yeah, I mean, he does. You just can't even imagine happening. Like, they're like drills for like calisthenics. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, and, I had a long conversation shots, like, with somebody about this last night at the bar as I was live tuning the game. And it was like, at what point does the NBA ever catch up to this type of behavior? And I guess then a sub-question of that is it replicable? Which I think, yeah, who's to say? But like, at what point do top-level NBA defenders or even just mid-level NBA defenders stop being completely blindsided by the things that Steph Curry is able to do? At what point do dudes just say, like, I don't care. Like, I don't care. I've watched enough tape, and I know that you can somehow hit this shot, so I'm not going to look away from you. And then does that change Curry's game plan? You know,
well, you know, I think the interesting thing about Steph is, like, when he first came in the league, or even through, you know, his first 3-4 years, he wasn't playing at this level, right?
Oh, of course. So, yeah. Well,
I think part of it is just adjusting, like,
everything. Yeah.
So I think part of it is really just adjusting to the fact that this guy is doing these things, and this is totally not only unprecedented for the league, it's actually unprecedented for him. And so I think it's adjusting the way guys see him and perceive him. Whereas with guys like Shaq, to some extent, or Jordan, who dominated their time for being uniquely dominant in various ways. You know, I think those guys came in. Jordan did take a while, obviously, to become the great winner that he became. But, you know, I think individually, you kind of knew what Jordan was going to give you from day one. And he got better and better at those things. And Shaq, the same thing. Shaq got better and better at the things he was going to do. Curry, the things he's doing now, you just couldn't have guessed from his rookie year.
Yeah.
They're just so absurd.
I agree.
Like, you know, I think that's probably the difference. I think the league is still kind of adjusting their scout to Steph.
Well, and I wrote about that. I think that the league has never seen a player improve as much from being drafted to becoming an MVP or whatever his ceiling. It wouldn't surprise me if next year he comes and hits like 420, 430 three-pointers or something. You know, like,
right.
And I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast or not, but the only other comparable sort of stat that fits into that world of what Steph did this last year, to kind of sidetrack a little bit, but Babe Ruth came into the league as a pitcher, but then he ended up, you know, I think I believe it was Roger Sherman for SB Nation wrote about this, but the record for home runs in a single season when Babe Ruth finally broke it was like 26 or 27 or somewhere in that realm. And then he set the new record with 28 or whatever it was. And I don't know the exact numbers. And then the next year he came back and hit 52. And then after that, he hit 52 every season after that, which is why he was then the home run king until Hank Aaron came around. Like, I do think that is sort of the blueprint for what Steph is now about to do, which is that, I mean, I don't think 400 is an aberration, because you look at his skill set, unless he gets hurt
or unless
something else happens, like he's figured out that he can hit, you know, 50 plus percentage of his three pointers, hoisting, you know, 800 or 900 three pointers per year. And so why not do it? I mean, why not? And so I don't know.
And the other thing is, like, you know, the amazing thing is, like, you know, Babe Ruth hit those homers. Like, I don't think as a batter, Babe Ruth sat out a comparable amount of quarters or innings in comparison. You know what I mean? Like, Curry was sitting out fourth quarters and still obliterated this record.
Right. That's it's crazy.
Unbelievable.
I'll tell you what Babe probably did do a lot more of is, and I'm going to put this in a very PC way, celebration of his triumphs off the field.
Well, yes.
Maybe even on the field in the dugout.
Wait, are you saying that Babe Ruth celebrated his triumphs with women in a dugout during games?
Well, I don't. Well, I mean, smoking and drinking, probably.
Yeah, I would believe that.
He had a cigar in his mouth. I think one thing about Curry's dominance, and trying to think of if it actually compares to other players' offensive dominance, like we talk about Jordan, you talk about Shaq. is that he's destroying the other players' like instincts, like their basketball instincts. He's overcome and staying on him 30 feet away and all these things that like Curry is very, very uniquely capable of doing. So, I mean, maybe somebody like Shaq, who was absolutely unstoppable, in the post one-on-one, was destroying instincts as well, and that his footwork was so good for a big guy that he could pivot before they expected him to do that. But even then, I don't if they could stay with him, I don't know if they would be able to, because those big guys didn't have the same agility as he did. And you would think that players have the same ability, the perimeter players, if can guard Steph, when they're really focused, they should be able to do that 100% of the time. But that's, focus is this skill, is this instinct that you have to hone. I think Van Gundy was talking about this on the Zach Lowe podcast earlier this week, about how hard that is, like how difficult it is to stay focused 100% of the time. And that's something that you have to do against the Warriors, because they catch you napping, then they're going to score like 10 points in a minute.
I also think to jump in real quick, I think you talk about focus, and I think that focus more than anything else, and other than hard work, I think is the cornerstone of Steph's game. And he focuses so much more deeply than his opponents do. And he's always thinking one step ahead, and his idea of what is possible has obviously transcended the commonly accepted idea of what is possible in the NBA today. And that really plays into how Steph has grown, in my opinion, more so, like I said before, than any other player who's ever come into the league. And I think it's a product of his commitment, and it's a product of his belief and his focus, which are all, there's three different words for the sort of the same thing,
You could, interestingly, you could argue that Steve Nash is up there in terms of improvement from rookie to MVP selection.
But I don't think his ceiling
was not nearly as high.
But and maybe his floor, maybe his floor was lower. His floor was lower. Yeah, but like
you could argue his floor was lower. So, your point stands. Your point still stands, certainly.
Yeah, but those two guys are definitely the two. And seeing Nash come out of college, I still am pissed that expletive that the Warriors didn't draft Nash. Like, he played at Santa Clara. He was in your back home. Like,
did you want him at that time though?
I was a child.
I mean, did you?
I mean,
That's what I'm saying.
Honestly, I don't remember that draft. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I was a wee babe. Yeah. But I can tell you, I do remember my dad talking a bunch of trash about that draft, like around that same time. Yeah, my dad really wanted Nash, because my stepmother worked she was a radio DJ at a radio station that was housed like right across the street from that campus, and so my dad was down there all the time, and he would like watch box scores like a crazy person and check out Nash that whole time, and he was all in on Nash. And he was like, I can't believe they didn't take him. And then years later, Nash turned into Nash. And then, the rest is history. But
yeah. Well, we got hurt. We're good.
I think it worked out all right.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be so sweet if all his years hadn't been such utter trash.
Yeah, I agree.
The other tidbit I should just interject here. The other tidbit that I had saved for this podcast that I put some the minor amount of research I put into this was actually just a little tweet from Samus Fondiari, who's really great basketball follower. If you're on Twitter at Samus Fondiari, you probably follow him. Noting that the Thunder averaged 25.2 free throw attempts in the regular season. 26.2 in the playoffs so far. They had 32 in game one and just 19 in game two.
Yeah.
Nice. And like, is that, I mean, that seems like a number, that, if you're going to look at any numbers and pull anything from, from the data from those first two games, like that's really, really interesting and seemingly significant. Like, was that a matter of the Thunder not being aggressive, or was it a matter of the Warriors playing more stout defense and reaching less and being more focused on the defensive assignments? Did you guys see anything that they were doing differently there? I mean, like less scrambling on the offensive boards, et cetera?
I'm going with hashtag NBA conspiracy theory, 7 games or bust. It's my professional opinion.
You know, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. I'd have to go back and look at it for that specifically. I actually missed that. So that's awesome. I think that probably, here's my guess. My guess is that the Thunder settled more.
And bailed out also,
the defense a little bit more, but that's totally a guess.
And also, like, in the second half, there was a long stretch game where they obviously were not going to win. So I'm sure, you know, they stopped pressing as much. They stopped going to the hoop. Like, I mean, 19-26 is only 5 fouls over the course of 2 periods. You know, that's 2.5 fouls. Or, jeez, 19-26 is 7 fouls. Sorry. But it's still,
hard. It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Math is hard. Ivan knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I can't do it. So far in this series, Russell Westbrook, as we kind of predicted, and has not had a good shooting series, has turned them into a distributor. This happened kind of all season long against the Warriors. Westbrook has not shot a good percentage at all. Is that more of a notion of team defense that's shutting him down? Because I mean, Steph was defending him for a bunch of that time, but also Klay switching on to him. Is he just not getting to the rim because of the way the Warriors are playing their defense, or is there anything else that you can pull from Westbrook's game that's kind of flummoxing a little bit?
You know what's interesting around that, and it's something else I haven't looked at that I probably will shortly after this podcast, is you know, they've been putting Draymond on Roberson a lot and having him sag off, kind of play like a free safety position. And that makes it so that, like, whoever comes to the paint, Draymond just sort of, like, rotates over to him. You can see him. He blatantly ignores Roberson. He's not even trying. Deservedly so, obviously. Yeah. So as long as they're doing that, I think, you know, it's interesting to put, you know, you could they've obviously switched the matchups up quite a bit. But when you have Draymond hanging out and ready to switch to rotate over to anybody because he doesn't have to care about Roberson, then he can rotate over to Durant. He can rotate over to Westbrook. And I think that really clogs up the interior for the Thunder. So I would be interested to see how many minutes Westbrook is playing with Roberson. And then, you know, Deion Waiters is Deion Waiters. So,
well,
you know,
I mean,
exactly, set anybody up for shots. So.
It does make you. I mean, I obviously the Thunder wouldn't change their lineup yet. It's a tie series 1-1. They stole a game in Oakland, so it's not not dire at all yet. And I wouldn't even if they lose game 3, I don't know if they would get to that point. But I mean, you do have to start wondering if Waiters gets injected into the start lineup just because of that base defense that the Warriors are playing with guarding line, and they're able to really shut down the lane early on and. I wonder if if the Thunder would make this switch just so that they could try to open up lanes early in the game to set a different tone and start getting people.
Yeah, but I think like the Thunder, I mean, you look at game 1, they set that tone with their defense. You know, in the fourth quarter, they held the Warriors to 14 points or whatever it was. And the defensive difference between Roberson and Waiters is the Grand Canyon. And trying to jump it with a tricycle, basically. And so if they want to come out and make a point, I think that Roberson in the starting lineup, like if they're committed to their defense, which is the way that they won the only game that they've won so far, I don't think you can get away from that. I really don't think you can start Waiters. Cause then what if, you know, what if the, if you're starting Waiters and Waiters on Klay and he gets switched on a Curry and there's all this weird movement and pick and roll and then like, all of a sudden, the Warriors are up 15 in the first quarter, and then Roberson comes in. I mean, that doesn't work. So, I don't know.
They're really matchup wise. The Thunder really have some serious rotation problems right now because, you know, Cantor is, you know, another game like game 2 away from playing himself out of the series.
But they only have 3 people on the bench. I just want to bring that. Randy Foy, Enes Kanter, and
that's my point. They're really stuck. They're in a bad spot matchup wise. So you have to play. You have to play Kanter. You have to play Waiters. You have to play Roberson. But those guys all have serious weaknesses that, you know, the Warriors are exploiting big time on both ends of the ball. And I think it's interesting because you're right. It's not like Donovan has a choice to go away from Cantor because he has to play him. But then it's a question of what kind of lineups can you put out there? How many different ways can you mix these things up to try to figure out how to minimize the damage that those guys are doing to you on the floor? Because, you know, the Cantor thing last night, I remember on Twitter, someone was like, wow, they're leaving Cantor in. It's like, well, who do you think he's going to put in instead? Adams just went down for a little while for the back injury, and they didn't have another option other than, you know, Cantor, Ibaka. They can go smaller. So they're in a – that's the thing that I thought separated these two teams in the beginning of the series was depth.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably going to be the thing that comes back to haunt the Thunder as the series goes longer.
Well, but, and again, I mean, like, the depth is not as big of an issue when you're playing the Spurs and they're much older and
exactly.
You can run them out of the court and you can play fast. It's like, I mean, the Thunder are significantly younger than the Warriors, but not in the same sphere as the Spurs. So
yeah,
and the Warriors are so much deeper. It's like, what I mean, how can you? That being said, I mean, look at game one, like weird things happen. But I don't know. I think Ivan could be right that the Warriors could then just sweep the rest of these series and it'd be over in five. I still don't know. I think that
it's impossible to, I mean, you guys are right about, I mean, obviously Durant and Westbrook are singularly so explosive and so talented and two of the, you know, best seven players in the league. I don't know. Like they can do anything at any time. It's not going to be really that surprising, but we have those guys too. That's like, yeah. I feel like those two things balance out. And then, so what it ends up coming down to is like the over matchups and like whether the defense, how defensive both sides are, how stout both sides are defensively. And the Warriors just have such a better track record, in that respect.
That's true.
That, I don't know.
Yeah, the Thunder dropped a bunch of games this year in the fourth quarter. Like midway through the season, it was darkness in Oklahoma City. Darkness washed over the dude in Oklahoma City as far as dropping games that they led going into the fourth quarter.
I also really wonder, and that this factors in, is I mean, they have a short bench. And they all already almost kind of looked tired yesterday, and I thought the Warriors looked a little beaten up in game one. So maybe this is just a game observation, but Adams was just taking a beating. It was not an easy game for him to play, and you know he got
kneed in the nuts. He got jumped on the back. I mean, so it painful. Was a bad. Adams did not wake up today feeling good. I mean, it was just I felt bad for the dude. Because I like Adams. I'm like Team Adams.
Even 37 minutes in game one and another 36 minutes in game two. And that's playing a lot of running around. He did a great job of getting back in transition. But it's just like so much exertion of energy.
Yeah.
That factors into the focus point of view. Like if you're spending energy, you're going to get fatigued, and like it's just going to take a minute for you to kind of, you know, walk back once just to catch your breath.
Yeah, and I mean he's 22, I think.
Yeah, 22, 23. Yeah.
Yeah, he's very young, but like no matter what age you are, if Festus Ezeli jumps into the sky and then like parachutes onto your back with the full force of God. And then Draymond Green, like 15 minutes later, just kicks you in the balls. Like, there's no age does not change the fact that that is a bad situation to be in.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I just want to point this out because this is kind of a tangent, but not really in a way. You know, people keep talking about how soft the Warriors are. And if you threw them back into the 90s, you know, the Warriors would be so soft and Mahorn and Lane Beer would beat them up. I would love someone to ask Adams about that today. Because this team with Bogut, Draymond, Festus, that is a kind of rugged front court. Like, no matter what anybody wants to say. And I put those guys, you know, Bogut and Festus are 2 7-foot dudes who are just, you know, they're jacked. Festus is like a jacked 7-foot dude. And Bogut is just like this nasty Australian dude who's like, doesn't care about your well-being. And I just think, like, between those two guys, you add in Draymond, who's an expert post defender and is not afraid to engage in contact. I mean, I'd put that front court up in pretty much any front court, and just in terms of pure toughness that we've seen in the NBA. And I have no hesitation saying that.
And I know that,
it's stupid for people to continue to argue this point that, you know, they'd be beat up by the bad boys. Like, these guys are huge and they don't care about physicality.
Yeah.
They're really imposing. And I don't know why that's so easily overlooked.
It's like a misconception that a shooting team equals a soft team. You know, they're not
totally
continuing to. I mean, this is like a Barkleyism, and that's about it, right?
Yeah.
People follow that.
Well, and we've talked about this.
Well, Dwight Howardism too.
Right.
But, yeah. We've talked about this off camera or off mic or whatever in our little private moments when we talk about all things Warriors and say all the cool stuff that we don't tell you guys. but we talked about this and was like, man, imagine if Draymond and Bogut, not so much Azeli because I feel like he's a little nicer, but like specifically Draymond and Bogut, imagine if they could get away with the kind of crap that Laimbeer got away with. Like, they'd be elbowing dudes in every body part. It'd be bad. It'd be like, you know, if they had existed back in that time, people would be talking about teams now and be like, well, how would they deal with Draymond and Bogut? Those dudes would destroy them. And it's like, they can't do that. I mean, they would if they could because they're nasty MFers, you know, but they can't. I'm glad that you brought this tangent up.
Yeah, I think this series is a test of it, right? Because the reality is the Thunder have beat this team up on the boards pretty badly this season. So, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from the Thunder's bigs. I think it's an interesting front court battle. But I think it's obvious after last night's game that when this team is locked in and they have a grudge against the team and they really want to prove their dominance, they will play tough with people. I think it's like Ivan said. I think it's, well, not like Ivan said necessarily, but, you know, because they have shooters, because their offense revolves around getting those shooters open, they appear soft because they're not down low. You know, Bogut's not down low, angling for position early and all that stuff. But it's like, this is those screens that anybody wants to run into. And when they want to send a message, they clearly can. I think Adams probably knows that now if he didn't before.
Unfortunately, I think one thing for his lower midsection.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I think one thing, and maybe one of the few areas that the Warriors can still improve on is getting to the free throw line. And I think that Zach Lowe made the good point that like the Thunder deserve a lot of credit for that overpassing because they're big. We're getting back to the rim to defend those layups, and you know they're super athletic and long, and so they were doing a great job of it. But for me, I want to see those guys not try to finish it, but just try to get to the line. You know, just jump into that big. Yes, they got back to defend the rim, but part of defending the rim, sometimes you got to foul some guys. So if you go up for that shot, make them foul you and show that you know you can make some points on the free throw line. And I think the Warriors still kind of want to get like that extra flashy pass and get everybody involved and get the easy shot or the you know back breaking three pointer, and it's really worked them obviously, but. But I wonder to what degree that kind of you know informs somebody of whether they're soft or not if they're passing out instead of getting the foul.
Dude, I just want to say real quick.
They too low, Ivan.
I think that the concept of people being soft in the NBA is such a bullshit concept, and I might go back and beep that. I also might not because I'm editing this podcast and I'm going to probably leave it. That being said, I think that Curry is maybe one of the smaller-ish players, more sprightly, frail-looking players in the league. I mean, like, even Isaiah Thomas, the second, you know, the second-generation Isaiah Thomas, who's only 5'8", that dude is buff as all heck, you know?
Yeah,
so, like, you know, you look at Curry, I mean, if you put Isaiah Thomas versus Curry in a fight, like, I'd probably take Isaiah Thomas. So, but that being said, Curry... Like, Curry is that dude at your gym who's just hella better at everything than you are. And he's climbing the rock wall, and he's scaling to, like, 30 feet, and he's doing, like, crazy backflips on the tar mat or whatever that gymnastic thing is called. And, like, these dudes are not soft. These dudes will kick you in the face, and they will hurt your face with their foot. And I think it's so disrespectful to any athlete to call them soft. Like, maybe that's permissible in the NFL because the NFL is predicated much more deeply upon, like, physical violence than the NBA. But you can't call any professional athlete soft because they literally are one of a 200-person club who made it to this specific point in life. And they did it by being tough dudes. And I can't hang especially with trolls, man. It's like, oh, your team is soft. It's like, dude, go find a giant vat of...
Yeah, you don't need to listen to trolls anyway.
I know, but I want them to do specific things I that I can't say on air. I want them harmed.
Well, this sounds like as good a time as any to call it a day for this podcast. Let's see, game is on Sunday, which seems like it's just so far away. That's really stupid, and I hope that the Warriors can keep the momentum from game two. But we shall see. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, blogtalkradio.com. You know, check out Golden State of Mind on Twitter, of course, is at Unstoppable B. On Facebook as well, facebook.com/Golden State of Mind, I believe. Well, check us out on Facebook. We've got a lot of stuff up there as well. And we'll talk to you after game three on Sunday. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Golden State of Mind.
Basketball players are soft.
Oh, boy.
Say hi to Spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 429, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.